The idea that they'd be thinking straighter in the morning turned out to be a forlorn hope. But when the cowboys gathered after breakfast, it was largely a repetition of what had already been said. Some had spent the night in town and were none too clear-headed. But gradually, most of the loudest got themselves talked out and became more inclined to listen, or at least to keep quiet. Complaints against the ranchers boiled down mainly to two: wages and the written rules of conduct. Rascal McGinty had had himself a royal time in town all night, and his eyes matched his uncombed red hair.
Boys, there's more to it than just money. They're changing things too much. They're changing things that ought to have been left alone. You take that cattle rule, main thing to me is they don't want no working cowboy to accumulate anything that would make him independent. Them owners, they got their pile made, and they want to keep the rest of us down to where we'll always have to work for them. I'd go on working for the wages I've been getting if I knowed they'd let me keep owning cattle.
That roused a storm of argument from Asher Cottingham.
Damn it, rascal! That's no more than I ought to have expected from you. Give an ordinary cowhand a few head of cattle, and already he's thinking like an owner. You'd be willing to take less money, and you'd hold down the rest of us who ain't lucky enough to own any cattle like you do. I can see where you rich fellers with cattle might be upset, but most of us here ain't got no cattle and don't ever expect to have no cattle. For us, the big problem is money. And that's what we're going to ask them ranchers for, is more money.
Edson Biggs stepped in.
Asher, a little while back you yourself said there was more to it than money. There was the whole set of rules and a rancher attitude toward employees. There was the question of respect.
By God, when they have to pay us enough, they'll respect us. $100 a month!
Boys, boys! It's not realistic. It takes three cows to bring $100, and there's never been a time a cowboy's labor was worth three cows a month.
Maybe it's been worth that much. We just never had guts enough to ask for it before.
Asher, you're supposed to shear the sheep, not skin it. If we break these ranchers, who will we work for?
I don't give a damn. There ought to be a law against them having so much anyway. If I was running this country, there couldn't no man have more than 10 cows apiece. Then maybe we'd all have a chance.
Cooler men began to speak up, and some cowboys who had initially backed Cottingham seemed inclined to scale down the asking price. It settled a while at a sullen 75. Hitch saw they were angering at Edson, so he took up the argument in Edson's stead and convinced most of them that 75 was still too much to hope for. Somebody suggested a compromise on 50. A lot of the cowboys seemed to regard that figure as satisfactory. Hitch didn't agree.
It's one thing to take a firm stand for something reasonable. It's another to ask for something plumb out of sight. Most outfits in this country are paying hands 25. We pay 30. We'll have snow 3 feet deep the 4th of July before any of these ranches will agree to double a man's salary.
We got them ranchers where the hair is short. We can get anything we want if we'll all stick together.
Well, use your head for something besides that hat, Asher. A good many cowboys didn't come with us. They're still working. As soon as word gets out, there'll be more men coming into the country looking for the jobs we left behind. We ain't got that much leverage. Best thing to do is get ourselves a settlement and go back to work before too many job hunters come drifting in.
We can go out to them ranches and make them other boys wish they'd come with us. We can patrol the roads and throw back anybody who tries to come in from outside. If we bloody a few heads, folks will sit up and take notice.
For a man who talks all the time about his own freedom, you don't seem to give a damn for anybody else's.
I say there's nobody else gives a damn about us. We gotta take care of ourselves.
There's always two sides to an argument. I figure if we've got a right to strike, other people have got a right not to strike.
The other man ain't got no side when we're in a fight. The hell with him. The only thing that matters is to win.
$50 was as low as the majority was willing to go. Edson Biggs was given the task of tailoring the demand into good legal terms that would seem to give the whole thing a courthouse flavor, and perhaps impress upon the ranchers that they were not dealing with a bunch of naive, unschooled cowpunchers.
How's this sound, Hitch? We, the undersigned cowboys of Canadian River, do by these presents agree to bind ourselves into the following obligation. First, that we will not work for less than $50 per month, and we furthermore agree no one shall work for less than $50 per month after 31 March. Second, good cooks shall also receive $50 per month. Third, anyone running an outfit shall not work for less than $75 per month. Those not having funds to pay board after 31 March will be provided for 30 days.
It's too much money. It's just too damned much.
I'll grant you, most of these men have been underpaid for their work and the hell they go through. But if you paid every man just what he's worth, there are a few who wouldn't be making $20.
And they are generally the ones that holler the loudest.
Hitch decided Edson's handiwork said what the cowboys had voted to say, even if he thought it asked for too much. One by one, as they got around to it, the cowboys came and affixed their names. Somehow then, with all those signatures on it, the thing seemed more like a real legal document. In its own small way, it was sort of a declaration of independence. It was up to Edson to sit down and make enough copies by hand to go around to all the ranchers. While he did that, Hitch went to town to make a duty call on cowboy Joe Sands, still recuperating from his broken leg in a shack Fant Gossett was furnishing for a fee. Joe lay on a cot, the splinted leg propped up. He shoved his hand at Hitch. They howdied and shook and swapped yarns a while. Some of the W hands had been in to see Joe already, and they had thoughtfully carried him some whiskey, which still sat on a table, unopened. Joe Sands was not much inclined in that direction.
I don't know much about this strike thing, Hitch, but if you'd like me to join up with you, I will. Can a man strike with a broken leg?
You've got no cattle, Joe. Are you sore at Charlie Wade?
Charlie's always been a friend to me.
Well, then you stay right where you're at. Stay on the payroll. Don't be tipping over the chili pot. You need Charlie and he needs you.
Hitch, there's an awful lot happening these days that I don't understand.
Neither do I, Joe.
A group from each outfit got together and decided who would take a copy to each ranch owner or manager. It was important that they choose men the ranchers might respect. Charlie Wade was Hitch's responsibility. Hitch had rather take a raw hiding, but he went. First stop was Trump Tatum's chuck wagon, where cowboys told him Charlie had gone on to another camp. Some of the men from the other two divisions had left their wagons to join the strikers in town, so Charlie had regrouped what men he had left into only two divisions, both sadly short-handed.
How's Charlie?
The old cook was cool. In his view, Hitch had betrayed Charlie. Perhaps even worse, Hitch had asked for Trump's advice and then had not followed it.
No, how's Charlie always? Same as ever, only more of it.
Hitch found Charlie with the second roundup crew in the midst of the herd and cutting out cattle, something he hadn't done much in recent years. He had let younger men do it, for a cutting horse could move swiftly and shift direction in the batting of an eye, spilling a rider. Charlie saw Hitch, but he didn't quit until he'd finished pairing up cows and calves to his satisfaction. He let Hitch wait on horseback at the edge of the herd for the better part of an hour. He rode out slowly and raised his hand in a half-hearted salute.
You come back to work?
No, Charlie. I come to deliver this.
Hitch handed him the strike declaration.
You'll have to tell me what's in it.
Hitch told him.
Wished I could read it. But it wouldn't make no difference anyway. The ranchers have all agreed they won't treat with any of the strikers. Every cowboy who went on strike is fired for good. We've agreed that none of us will ever hire any man who took part, whether he was from our outfit or another. We're through with all of them. Hitch, I'll make one exception. You. If you come back, you still got a job, and you can keep your cows.
I never did want to leave here in the first place. between you on one side and Rascal and them on the other, I found myself in a bind where I couldn't do anything else.
Will you come on back?
Charlie, would you extend the same offer to the other boys?
I can't.
I'd never be satisfied in my own mind if I took something the other boys couldn't have.
I've made my agreement with the ranchers.
And I've made mine with the boys, Charlie. Looks like we're both stuck with something we didn't want.
When Hitch returned to the strike camp, he recognized the old spring wagon, the tongue dropped slantwise in the badly beaten grass. Rascal McGinty strode out to meet him, all grin.
Look who's joined up with us, Hitch.
Law McGinty didn't hump himself any to come forward.
Law?
Hitch?
He's come to join up with us.
You think you ought to? Seems to me like you should be staying out yonder with Kate till she's delivered.
Kate's had herself a boy.
You hear that, Hitch? Law says it's the spitting image of his daddy. That makes me an uncle, Hitch.
She's doing all right, is she?
Her mother's gonna stay a while. You know how hard that old lady is to get along with. I felt like I could come over here and join up with the boys. The more there are of us, the stronger we'll be.
Law, I ain't sure you got any place here. You were out of a job before the strike ever commenced. You can't strike against somebody you wasn't even working for.
Your fault, Hitch. I figure my place is here with the boys. I'm paying my way. Even brought a beef.
Law jerked his thumb toward two halves of a beef hanging from a tree limb. One uncovered, the other wrapped in a bloodstained tarp.
One of your own?
Well, he was when I finished skinning him.
Well, I don't reckon old Selkirk will starve because of one beef, especially when this one had a broken leg.
How'd he break it?
When I roped him.
Right or wrong, we're into this strike with all we've got. You being here puts a cloud over the whole bunch of us. Bringing a stolen beef makes it worse. They're wanting to call us thieves, some of them.
The beef is here now. We can't just put the hide back on the critter and turn it out on the grass again.
But if we're going to eat it, we're going to pay for it.
Hitch reached up and took Law's hat from his head and handed it to him.
Since you killed it, it's your place to pass the hat and take up a collection to pay Selkirk for it.
Law hurled it to the ground.
The hell I will!
Hitch picked it up and handed it back to him, crown down.
That's the way to hold it. The money stays in better.
Hitch dropped in a 4-bit piece for a starter. Law seemed likely at first to fight, but Rascal McGinty quickly dropped a couple of coins in the hat, by that silently telling his brother to get moving. Sullen, Law moved among the cowboys, and most dug into their pockets. Presently he was back, eyes still angry. He shoved the hat at Hitch.
That ought to be enough.
Law, you done right well.
Hitch spilled the coins onto a blanket spread on the ground and handed Law's hat back. Counting, he found almost $30. Hitch decided to make up the difference from the Chuck Fund and turn it in for a check that they could send to the Figure Four. He wondered which would have given Selkirk the most satisfaction, getting the money or not getting it, and thereby proving his own estimation that the cowboys were the motley thieves he'd been telling himself they were. The next day, John Torrington rode up the hill with a saddle gun in his lap to hurl the challenge where it belonged. It was said he had once ridden boldly into a Comanche camp to recover stolen horses. Age had not dulled his sharp edge. He was flanked by four loyal cowboys, all pushing to keep up with him.
Who's in charge of this heathen outfit?
Hugh Hitchcock had seen him coming and had drifted down partway to meet him.
Nobody, Mr. Torrington, and everybody. These are all free men.
Free of work, free of responsibility. Bunch of damn thieves and radicals.
Hitch studied the four cowboys. Next to Torrington sat Slant Unger, whose nickname came from a misshapen shoulder. People said he'd suffered it when a horse was shot from under him in a Mexican border battle fought for John Torrington. Two of the other cowboys Hitch knew by sight, but not by name. Beside Unger sat Tobe Ferris, a Negro cowboy whose mother Torrington had owned before the war. Some people claimed they could see a resemblance to Torrington in some features of Tobe's dark face. Hitch had always regarded that as overactive imagination.
Well, Hitchcock, Charlie Wade was sure as hell wrong about you.
something you wanted, Mr. Torrington?
Damned right. I want all you loafers down off this hill, and I want you off it in a hell of a hurry. This is my land you're squatting on, and I won't have it. It's all my land, right up to where the town starts. If I'd had any sense, I'd never let them put the town there either.
As I remember it, Mr. Torrington, this here land still belongs to the state. You just been using it for your cattle. You got no more claim on it than anybody else.
I claim it by right of first possession. Wasn't nobody here when I come but a few Mexican sheep herders and a remnant of Indians with the butt end out of their britches. I took it, and I'm keeping it. I want you off.
I take it you've already talked to the sheriff. What does he say?
Never mind the sheriff. He's just a county employee. I do my own talking.
Then I reckon we'll just have to tell you no, Mr. Torrington. Respectfully, of course. But no. Anything else you wanted?
You got a snake track chuck wagon up here? It belongs to me. I'm taking it.
We've been keeping it for you. You're welcome to it. You'll find some supplies gone from it. We'll pay you for those.
That threw the old man off for a moment. He hadn't expected it. His sharp eyes searched the crowd, fastening briefly on each striking snake track hand he saw.
There was a team of mules with that wagon. Where are they at?
Grazing along the river. They'll be easy to find.
Some of these men rode in here on company horses. I'm gathering up every snake track horse I lay my eyes on.
They're yours, Mr. Torrington.
Torrington turned to the cowboys on either side of him.
Go get the stock.
Like to step down and have some coffee while you wait?
Amongst this crowd? I wouldn't touch it.
Torrington sat there alone and defiant in the midst of the opposing men, while his cowboys spurred down the river and began working through the scattering of horses. It was evident he meant his presence to be a challenge. He seemed to hope someone would make a move against him. He wore an old six-shooter on his right hip, and he continued to hold the saddle gun ready. The crowd of striking cowboys stayed, staring expectantly at Torrington, or talking quietly among themselves. In a little while, Hunger and Ferris brought the mules. The other two men remained on the river, holding the horses they had gathered. The striking snake track cook moved to help harness the team.
You ain't working for us no more. You keep your grubby hands off them mules.
When the mules were hitched to the wagon, the Negro tied his horse onto the back and climbed up into the seat, ready to move. Slant Hunger took his place beside Torrington, his eyes making a blanket challenge for any in the crowd to contest him.
I'm telling you, Hitchcock, I want all of you down off this hill.
Law McGinty walked up behind Hitch.
You heard what Hitch told you, so you just chase yourself up a stump, old man. There ain't nobody here afraid of you.
Stand easy.
Seems to me I know you, cowboy, but I can't quite call your name.
It's Law McGinty.
Oh, yes. You was the one caught sleeper in cattle. I remember you now, and I'll keep on remembering you. You're in bad company, Hitchcock, but I reckon it's of your own choosing. Now listen to me, every one of you. If the sheriff won't do nothing about you, there's other ways. There's men left over from the Lincoln County War in New Mexico that'll do anything for hire. I bet it wouldn't take more than 5-6 of them to chase the whole damn bunch of you clear into Indian territory. You think on it now, do you hear? You think on it!
As Torrington rode away and the chuck wagon trailed dust down the hill, Dan Truman and Edson Biggs moved to Hitch's side.
That old cougar means what he says, Hitch.
Even if he does, it'll take him time. It may not take guns to bust up this outfit. Hard whiskey and easy women will undo more cowboys than Torrington ever could.
Turning, he noticed a man talking to Law McGinty and Asher Cottingham. He looked like another cowboy. The working clothes, the battered felt hat, boots, and spurs. But Hitch knew he was not one of the striking group.
Edson, is that who I'm afraid it is?
That's Cato Bramlett.
Cato Bramlett carried the reputation of being the worst cow thief in the Texas Panhandle, working between here and the sanctuary of the New Mexico line. Hitch started to move toward him. Dan Truman caught his arm.
You better watch him. He's dangerous.
Yeah, in more ways than one.
Law and Cottingham watched Hitch curiously, but Hitch's eyes were on the thief.
Bramlett, I want to talk to you.
Talk away.
You don't belong in this camp. I got friends here. If old Torrington saw you, and them sharp eyes see everything, you know what he must have thought.
Maybe you'd like to tell me what he thought.
Torrington wants to believe that we're a band of thieves. You being here makes that easy.
You calling me a thief?
You got that reputation.
Bramlett took a step forward, then stopped. Dan and Edson had moved up on either side of Hitch, and the other cowboys silently came in behind him.
This the man in charge up here?
Nobody said anything.
Well, then you boys are worse off than I thought.
Bramlett got on his horse and rode down the hill. Law McGinty turned angrily.
Now, Hitch, what'd you go and do that for?
If you don't know, then it won't do no good for me to tell you.
Two men had been appointed to deliver the strike declaration to Prosper Selkirk at the Figure Four. They returned with the papers still in their hands. Angrily, they related that they had ridden out to Figure Four headquarters and had been met at the office door by Selkirk, bolstered on both sides by cowboys who had remained with him. Selkirk had refused to touch the declaration or allow the messengers to read it to him. But he had scribbled a declaration of his own, which the cowboys now handed to Hitch.
I will not treat with saddle tramps and chuckline riders who try to justify their idleness by calling it a strike. With men who demand more than a day's work is honestly due. It is the employer's duty and right to affix wages and conditions of work. Any employee dissatisfied with the terms is always free to leave. And you men, if you're ever seen on Figure Four land again, you will be considered trespassers and may very well be shot.
Hitch read the letter and listened to the sullen messengers with Dan Truman and Edson Biggs.
It's no more than we ought to have expected. We didn't figure Selkirk would invite them in for a drink.
They got some new hands out there. I seen men I never seen before.
Asher Cottingham jabbed his finger at Hitch.
I've been telling you we ought to cut off the roads.
Rascal McGinty smacked his right fist into the palm of his left hand.
It's an insult, Hitch. It's a rotten insult for every cowboy that ever lent life and limb to these ranches. We're as welcome as rain when they can use us and throw it off like old socks when they can't.
You never worked for the Figure Fours a day in your life, Rascal.
Him and his kind? It ought to be open season on them big city high binders like it is on rattlesnakes and centipedes. They ought to be hung up by the thumbs.
We didn't none of us expect them to take this strike and like it. In Selkirk's place, we'd kink our tails a little bit ourselves.
I told you the day you come here, Hitch, they'd be hiring new hands to take our place. I say we ought to go patrol the country and throw all them stray cowboys out. Time we splash a little blood around, they'll stop coming in.
The man who tries that is going to have to whip me first. Them others, they got rights too.
Goddamn a man who's always talking about somebody else's rights. Hard to tell half the time whose side you're on, Hitch. It's us we got to worry about. Everybody else can go to hell.
The atmosphere in camp became so thick, it was a relief that night when Rascal and Law and a sizable bunch of men decided to go down into town to look for refreshment.
Time they bought a few rounds of Fant Gossets, they'll have more to worry about than cussing Prosper Selkirk. I'm going to hit the Sugans and catch some sleep while it's quiet around here.
Next morning, Edson Biggs blinked the sleep out of his eyes and looked around.
Boys were sure quiet coming in last night.
They didn't come in at all.
Dan Truman was up walking around worriedly and sharing Hitch's thoughts.
You reckon we better go down and hunt for them, Hitch? Could be they've went and got themselves thrown in jail.
That wouldn't surprise Hitch, knowing where the sheriff's loyalties lay. He took time for breakfast first, though, figuring the men were probably asleep anyway, wherever they were. Then he, Dan, and Edson rode down from the hill. They made Hogtown first, riding out the streets and alleys. They found a couple of cowboys, but not the ones they were looking for. They put off the cracker box of a jail until last. When they didn't find the men anywhere else, they decided there was nowhere left. The sheriff was sleeping in the tiny front office, and it took him a while to come fully awake.
Yeah, I got some cowpunchers in here. Say, ain't there anybody in charge up there at y'all's camp? Ain't there anybody got authority to tell some of these yahoos when it's time to quit? Strike? Hell, the whole damn bunch of you had ought to be in jail, the way I see it.
Could we see about your prisoner, Sheriff?
Well, hell's bells. Go see him for yourself. You don't need to bother me about it. Take them with you if you got a mind to. They probably ain't got any money left to pay a fine no way.
Only three men were in the cell, and it was plain they weren't going anywhere for a while. Hitch didn't disturb them. He backed out.
Wrong man. Sorry we bothered you, Sheriff.
Oh, think nothing of it. I enjoy being up most of the night quieting down cowpunchers. Then getting woke up at the crack of dawn. Makes me feel like I'm doing something worthwhile.
The three men climbed back into their saddles and looked at each other uneasily.
You reckon they rode off someplace?
Selkirk's.
Well, we better go bring them back before they get into trouble.
Whatever trouble they had in mind, I'm afraid it's too late now to stop them. They're already in it. A couple of hours later, they heard horses plodding along. The riders slouched in their saddles, wearied and half asleep. They rode into camp without fuss and slipped out of the saddles. Rascal McGinty leaned against his bay horse to support his rubbery legs till the circulation got going.
Want to know where we've been at, Hitch?
I'm afraid to ask you.
We went out to hoorah old Selkirk a little and show him how the wolf went over the hill.
Figured you did. I hope y'all didn't wind up in no trouble.
One thing you gotta give old Selkirk, he's a cold, gutty bastard. I didn't think he had it in him. He stood up there like a man and told us exactly what he thought about us, which was considerable. You ain't been properly cussed till you had it done to you by a damn Yankee banker, Hitch. He purely knows the words. And you remember Dayton Brumley that used to rip for him at the W Wagon, the one I come near shooting over that roan cow? He stood right by Selkirk. They got more guts than I gave him credit for.
For God's sake, Rascal, I hope you didn't hurt anybody.
How could we? Them standing there on the gallery with all them guns pointed straight at us? Damn it, Hitch, you never seen so much cannon in all your life. Looked like enough to have shot their way through the Battle of Bull Run.
There wasn't but four guns. I kept telling you, Rascal, we could have took them.
Could have got your fool head blowed off, Law. You was too drunk to know how close you came to being killed. Damn fool, Button. I hope that baby boy don't take after you when it comes to sense. Otherwise, he'll never make it to be grown.
I'm glad, Rascal, there wasn't nobody hurt.
We could have took him if Rascal would have let us. We didn't have to stand there and take that cussing.
Better a cussing than a funeral.
At least it'll be a while before old Selkirk chases wolves with them hounds of his and gets some other cowboy's leg broke like he done Joe Sands.
What did you do?
I rode by the dog pen as we left. I shot them dogs.
Hitch, I'd sort of intended to do that myself.
Why the hell didn't you?
I tried, but I kept missing him.
Law was on his feet again, swaying a little. I didn't miss him. Get him out of my sight, Rascal. Keep him out of my sight till you're both sober. On his way to visit Joe Sands, Hitch went and bought a bottle at Fent Gossett's saloon. He took it over to the shack where Joe stayed, and Joe watched while Hitch drank most of it.
You're going to hate yourself.
I think I already do. Looking back later, Hitch could see that from that point, things went downhill. It would be hard to say the strike ended on any particular day, or even in a particular week, for it just dragged on and died away gradually in painful gasps. Some cowboys began straggling off, a few to seek jobs at their old outfits. They didn't find them. A nine-bar hand Hitch had known a long time came back cheerless and tired from a ride out to the ranch.
They wouldn't even talk to me, Hitch. I offered to work for the same wages I was getting, and they're so short-handed it hurts to watch them. But they got themselves a blacklist, got all our names on it. There won't none of them ranchers give a job to one of us.
After the affair out at Selkirk's, Rascal McGinty stayed sober. He was good help, finally, when it was too late for help to matter much. Holding the strike together was like trying to grab a handful of water. It leaked out between all fingers. Edson Biggs came to Hitch one day, his expression dark.
We spent the last of the chuck fund today, and there ain't enough flour and coffee to go past tomorrow noon. We'll be out of beef pretty quick.
We'll make another assessment. How much you figure we'll need?
We've already lost between a third and a half of the men. We'll lose the rest before long, I expect. $5 ought to do it. There might be enough left at the end for us to hold awake.
They went among the cowboys. Some dug into their pockets without complaint. A few of the cautious ones declined. Some turned their pockets wrong side out and found nothing. Fant Gossip came in his buggy, his weight mashing the spring seat way down. That fine, broad smile he had used at first was gone now. He pointed a big, stubby finger like a pistol.
Hitch, I need to be talking to you.
Nothing ever stopped you yet.
Now, Hitch, you know that when y'all started this strike, I told you it was all right with me. I was back of you all the way. I didn't think it was much of an idea. I always talked against it, but if y'all wanted a strike, I told you you had old Fan Gossip support. I always told you that, didn't I? Well, Hitch, I've always been a generous man. I'd give the shirt off my back if it would help some poor soul to his feet. But on the other hand, I ain't operating no charity institution down there. Now, there's been 3 or 4 of them cowboys been giving me a mite of grief, been coming down there thinking because they spent all their money, I ought to give them whiskey on credit. You know credit's poison to a businessman. It's cash on the barrelhead, I always say. Now, I don't want them boys troubling me no more. If they do, I'll have to call the sheriff into it. He's looking for an excuse to jail as many of you boys as he can anyway. You tell them boys for me, Hitch, if they ain't got the money to spend, don't be coming down to the place and bother me for whiskey. You do that, it'll save us all a right smart of grief.
I'll tell them, Fant. And in return, I want you to do me a favor.
Anything reasonable, Hitch, you know I'll be tickled to.
If I ever again show my face in your place of business, I want you to kick me out the front door.
Now, Hitch, you know you're welcome down there anytime, just anytime at all. What I said about them others, I just got to take care of my business is all.
Well, then you go on and see about your business, Fan. I don't want to detain you none.
Hitch told Edson and Dan he was planning to leave come daylight.
The wise man realizes when he's whipped. He wipes his nose, picks up his hat, and leaves while he can still walk. I don't aim to be the last one out.
Edson Biggs stared past Hitch toward the main part of the camp, his eyes sober.
At least you have somewhere to go, Hitch. Many an old boy here doesn't have that, or the money to take him there if he had.
They're not all broke, Edson. There's some of those cowboys that sat on their money like they was trying to make it hatch. There'll always be the thrifty kind among us.
But there'll always be some of that other kind who can't see past tonight's poker game, who'll spend their last dime to pinch some empty-headed girl on the cheek, front or rear. Give one man $100, and pretty soon he'll have $200. Give another man $100, pretty soon he'll come back to you looking for more.
I've been asking myself 100 times, where'd we go wrong? Where'd we come apart?
We lost it before we started. We lost it for one thing, because we struck for the wrong reasons. We cheapened ourselves. We cheapened what we stood for when all we could agree to ask for was higher wages. We should have talked about dignity and freedom. Those things count for more than money. Money's soon spent. When it's gone, it leaves no mark. But when a man loses dignity, that leaves a mark on him that stays. We didn't come apart. We never were really together.
There didn't have to be a strike. Both sides had some right and some wrong. If we'd all been willing to talk to each other, maybe we could have got around it. But the wrong people always seem to grab hold of things and holler instead of listen. I've never understood why it's always easier to fight than it is to talk.
Not many people can see more than one side to an argument. You have that gift, Hitch, if it is a gift. I'm inclined to think it's a handicap. You'll be miserable all your life because you see both sides. The man at peace with himself is the one who sees nothing but his own.
Much of what Edson was saying went over Dan Truman's head.
All I know is that we lost and the ranchers won.
We lost, but they didn't win. In the end, they'll find out they've lost too.
Damned if I see how you figure that.
Yeah, you will. In time. Hey, Hitch, where are you going when you leave here?
I got a little money saved back that I can buy the necessaries with. I got me a section of deeded land and a little bunch of cows. I can plant me a garden and I can hunt. I can live a while on a little enough of them. They'll play hell starving me to death. Well, same goes for you, too. Goes for a lot of these men. The big ranches figure on them leaving the country, but they won't. They have a toenail hold here and they'll stay. What's more, they're mad. And anything the ranches do to squeeze them out will make them dig in a little deeper. There are probably 15, 20 men who came to this strike as working cowboys and will leave it as small ranchers, mad at the big outfits and determined to stay. Some cowboys will find themselves a place in town, and the town itself is more against the outfits now than it ever was. The ranchers will find out that instead of clearing this country, they've broken a hornet's nest around their ears. They won't be able to control elections. They'll find people voting taxes on them like they never paid before. They won't run this sheriff's office much longer, and they won't run the court.
I've had time to do a lot of thinking since we've been here. The old-time cowboy is finished. But the days of the big ranchers are numbered, too. This is going to be a little man's country. And the little man is going to need himself a bank he can go to with dignity and trust. Now, I think I know some money men back home who will listen to me. Now, I'll get the backing and open a bank here that will serve men like you, Hitch, and you, Dan. A bank too small for the figure four or the W or the snake track, but able to lend a man money to buy a section of land or 50 cows or groceries to help him survive till spring in a dugout winter camp. A lot of state land here is for sale if people can raise the money. I'll help them raise it. We'll crowd these big ranches off of the free range. Then we'll see who is lost and who is won.
Rascal McGinty had come up to listen.
Rascal, maybe it's time you was taking Law home.
Past time. He don't mean no harm, but he seems like he causes it just the same. I wished you could talk to him, Hitch.
I'm done talking to him. From now on, Rascal, I reckon you'll have to do that yourself.
Rascal and Law and Cottingham were hunched over a coffee pot next morning as Hitch swung into the saddle at good daylight. Cottingham squatted on his spurs, nursing a hot cup in his hands and watching resentfully.
Deserting us, are you, Hitch? It's your fault. If they'd have listened to me instead of you, we'd have given them ranchers hell. If you hadn't acted like some scared old woman...
Asher, shut up!
Rascal grabbed Cottingham's collar and jerked him backward.
Take care of yourself, Hitch.
I will.
It was not out of the way for him to go by the McGinty place. It lay only a few miles from his own. Kate stood beneath a clothesline she had strung between the corner post of a fence and a wooden cross post she had set up near the front of the dugout. Flapping clothes had always been a worry to Walking Jack, so Hitch tied him a little way from the line. Hat in his hands, he walked up to Kate.
Strike over, Hitch? Did we win?
It's over. We didn't win. You look real fine, Kate. Hope you've been all right.
Just fine. I want you to see my baby boy. He's in the house with Mother. I'm sorry about the strike. What'll you do now?
Work for myself. I'm out of a job.
And then I reckon everybody is. Law, Rascal, everybody. Law and Rascal, they behind you?
I expect they'll be coming along. If not today, pretty soon. Not everybody's given up yet.
Well, come on, Hitch. Let me show you the boy.
He followed her into the dugout. It was small and crowded, but much cleaner than the name would imply. Babies had always appeared pretty much alike to Hitch, one and then another. But she bragged about this one being real special and already having its legs bowed to fit a horse as soon as it was a couple of months older and had its balance. This, of course, was an exaggeration. Most ranch boys didn't get put in the saddle until they were walking good. Kate wouldn't let Hitch go until she'd fed him, and he didn't really want to leave anyway on an empty stomach. He knew what it would be like batching on his own place. But by and by, there was no excuse to tarry longer. Kate followed him out to the horses.
You'll do fine, Hitch. You've always been one to do fine. I hope you'll come over real often.
I doubt there'll be much time, Kate. I have a right smart of work to do fixing up the place. Besides, here lately, since I had to let him go from the W's, Law ain't been none too friendly with me.
That'll pass. You've always been good friends. Anything wrong now, it'll pass.
Well, I hope so. I'm worried about y'all trying to make a living on a little place like this.
Oh, well, things always work out for people who have faith. I have faith in Law and Rascal.
Goodbye, Kate. If you ever need help, you know where I'm at.
I'll remember.
Hitch had told her he would have lots to do, but he hadn't realized how much time there was. Working on the W, he had had to let his cattle more or less take care of themselves. He had done very little toward building corrals to handle the men or a dugout for him to live in. He had a small one, built for an overnight camp and hardly big enough for a man to stretch his legs. Even that little one was half caved in from last winter's rains. The more he looked at it, the more it seemed he'd be better off to let it fall and build a new one. Meantime, he slept outside and hoped it didn't rain more than was needful. He decided to build what was known as a half-human, a dugout half under the ground and half above it. That was one step up in civilization, lying somewhere between a cave-type dugout and a frame shack in respectability. It took much pick and shovel work, which was a good thing because he brought up all the grievances of recent weeks and worked them out on the brown earth. By the time he'd planted the garden and finished the dugout, he'd pretty well rid himself of the pent-up angers. Spring was moving well along into summer. The rains came about as they were supposed to, the grass rising green and the cattle licking themselves, a sign they were doing well. The garden thrived, which pleased him in view of the fact that he had done little farming in his life. He had decided that until he had himself established financially, he would raise whatever he needed beyond coffee, flour, and the like, and if he couldn't raise it, he would do without it. That way he could conserve that tiny bankroll. Rascal came by Hitch's place a few times. He still tried to be his old red-headed grinning self, though he was more serious now. When Hitch looked for it, he could see trouble lying behind the forced laughter in Rascal's eyes. Rascal was out hunting for work where he could get it, pitching in as day laborer when one of the smaller ranchers needed help, one of the little men who had not been a party to either side in the strike and didn't give a damn about the blacklist. Most of these greasy sack outfits weren't recognized at the big ones' roundups and couldn't send reps to watch out for their interests. They took care of themselves the best way they could. Rascal's travels kept him posted on the gossip. He knew where most of the striking cowboys had gone. As Edson Biggs had predicted, a majority were still somewhere around. Some had found work with small ranches, not in the inner circle. The pay was small because those little ranchers didn't have the money. A number of cowboys stayed in town, some working, some showing no visible means of support. Hitch made it a point to ride out the country diligently and keep his cattle thrown back close to their own home range. If a two-diamond cow and calf were gathered in some big ranch's roundup, the cowboys were not likely to appropriate his calf, for that would be stealing. But on the other hand, they would not brand it for him either. They would simply throw the cow and unbranded calf back onto the open range. If Hitch didn't happen to come upon them before the calf was weaned, it would be a maverick, subject to branding by the first man who threw a loop on it. He supported the right of a man to maverick cattle, but he wanted to be sure none of them were his. One day he saw a cowboy riding a horse that looked familiar. The cowboy was a stranger, but Hitch remembered the horse, a little W Mustang named Chicken that Law McGinty used to ride. Hitch and the cowboy howdied and shook and introduced themselves. The name Hugh Hitchcock meant nothing to the young rider, though he worked for Charlie Wade and the W.
How is Charlie these days?
Oh, he's all right, except he's about as grouchy as an old he-coon with a colic.
Sounds like Charlie. And I don't suppose that strike improved him any.
No, but it's done me a world of good. I come up from South Texas with about $2 in my pocket looking for work. I heard about the strike and the ranch jobs opening up in these parts, so I went to the first ranch I come across and fell into this job at $30 a month.
Looking back on it, Hitch could see how futile it had been for the strikers to think they could bend the ranchers backward very long. Too many needy people all over the country were ready and willing to take their jobs.
At 30 a month, I can't see what all them fellers went on strike for. Just got too big for their britches, I reckon.
Yeah, I reckon.
Where I come from, it's a fair wage. I just wish I didn't have to put up with these maverickers that are plaguing us like skeeters. You haven't seen any of them varmints, have you?
No, but I'll keep my eyes open.
I'll do the same with them boys that just lost a strike. I hear they're a desperate bunch would just as soon shoot a man as look at him. I'm sure watching out that I don't run into none of them.
You do that.
Hitch almost ran into one of that desperate bunch himself a few days later. He had finished looking through his string of cattle to see if any two diamonds were among them, or any mavericks. They weren't. He found several snake track and figure four cows with calves, and one weaned heifer yearling carrying a fairly fresh figure four brand. Hitch wished he had found her before the figure four men did, but that was water under the bridge. Riding away through a clump of brush, he heard a stirring of hooves and looked back. Another horseman had ridden among the same cattle, checking them over just as Hitch had done. He evidently hadn't seen Hitch. Out of curiosity, Hitch decided to light and watch him for a while. The horseman shook down his rope, eased the heifer yearling away from the other cattle, and threw a loop over her stubby horns. Then he put spurs to the horse and dragged the heifer into the brush. Hitch couldn't see now, but he could tell that the cowboy jerked the heifer down and tied her. Directly, he caught a faint smell of burning wood, though the fire was kept so small that he never saw smoke. Hitch knew the horseman was burning a new brand on her hide. He swung onto Walking Jack and worked through the brush. The cowboy had a heated cinch ring and was changing the figure four brand into an LR.
Law!
Woof!
Law, if I was a figure four man, I could kill you right now.
Law McGinty had whirled and his pistol was half out of the holster before he recognized Hitch.
Hitch! You got an awful bad habit of slipping up on a man.
And you got a bad habit of making a man need to.
You ought never ride up on a man like that. It can get you killed.
Oh, you killing people now, Law?
Oh, you know better than that.
Not necessarily. You've moved up from sleeper in cattle to changing brands. Why not move on up a little farther and kill somebody? Keep up this kind of business and sooner or later you'll have to. Can't you find enough honest mavericks to suit you?
You throwing in on big company side now?
I've got no side except my own, but I got eyes. That heifer had a figure four brand on her before you got here.
Old Selkirk ain't gonna miss one now and again.
Is it just one now and again, or are you changing brands as fast as you can get around to them? Kate wouldn't be proud if she knew what you're doing. Neither would Rascal.
You figuring on telling him?
It's not my place to.
It ain't your place to tell me anything either. We might have won that strike if we'd used stronger measures. You wouldn't stand for them, and we lost it.
The strike's got nothing to do with you changing brands on somebody else's stock. We had some justice on our side in that strike. You got none with you on this.
Justice. Justice is a useless word in this part of the country. What matters is how many cows you got. The LR is going to have plenty of them before I'm through.
Even if you have to steal them?
You figure old John Torrington come by all his cattle honest? Or sell Kirk all his money? You can bet that any time they got a chance, they just reached out and grabbed. Well, I'm grabbing too. Now, Hitch, suppose you just ride on out of here. You ain't seen nothing and you ain't telling nothing.
I've seen, but nothing I'll ever want to tell.
One thing Hitch badly needed was a better set of corrals. He had only a couple of small working pens, and when he threw cattle into them, he found some of the calves crawling out because the spaces at the bottom were too large. He didn't want to spend money on lumber that could be better spent on land or cattle, so he carried an axe down to the creek bottom and chopped brush. It took him all the time he could spare for some weeks, chopping and hauling trunks and branches big enough and long enough to serve as posts and fencing. He was chopping branches to fit the fence when he saw a buggy approaching from the west, two people on the seat. One was a woman, he could tell by the scarf flying in the breeze. The man he soon recognized as Joe Sams.
Hitch, you probably don't know Maggie. This here is Maggie Horn from town.
Good of you to visit, Miss Horn. Joe, how's the leg?
Better, but I can't climb up and down from this buggy without help. That's how come I brought Maggie with me.
I'll help you down.
No time, Hitch. I've come to warn you.
Warn me?
A bunch of the big ranchers are meeting in town with the county commissioner's court. John Torrington and Prosper Selkirk and some of them others. They've drawn up a list of what they call maverick brands. This county court is going to order them seized and held.
Well, they can't do that. It ain't legal.
Anything is legal if you're big enough, and if you own the court and the sheriff. Hitch, they got your name and brand at the top of the list.
Why me?
They look on you as one of the leaders of that strike. The ranchers figured when the strike was over, the trouble would be over. But it's only just started. They thought all the strikers would leave the county, but the biggest part are still around pestering them ranchers like horseflies, chasing mavericks, running brands, things like that. Them big outfits are like a snake mad enough to bite itself. They want to put all the maverick men out of business, and they consider you one.
I never stole a cow in my life.
Well, they're fixing to steal yours, Hitch, if you don't get the jump on them. They got the McGinties on their list and a bunch of others.
We could get us a lawyer.
Yeah, fight them in their own court? It'd be like a banty hen fighting a chicken hawk. You gotta take care of your own self, Hitch. Charlie Wade said he tried to head them off, but he was swimming upstream.
Did Charlie tell you to come and warn me?
Not exactly, he didn't. But he must have known I would, else he wouldn't have gone to the trouble of telling me about it.
Oh, I don't know what to do, Joe. I can't fight the law. Even their law.
That's what I told Charlie. He said if he had a friend in that fix, he'd tell him this is a county court and it's got no jurisdiction anywhere else. Said he'd tell him that if he rounded up his cattle and pushed them across the county line, they couldn't touch him. At least not unless they got to the next county to do the same thing. Mind you, if anybody was to ever ask, I couldn't tell them that Charlie told me to tell you that. He just said if he had a friend in that fix, well, that's what he'd say.
Thanks, Joe. I reckon I'd best get busy.
Wished I could help you round them up, Hitch, but this leg won't let me get on a horse yet. An old fence buggy won't hardly operate off of a road.
I'll do for myself. You're going over to tell Rascal and Law, ain't you?
Hadn't figured on it.
I'd take it as a personal kindness if you would.
I've been hearing some things about Law. All right, Hitch, I'll go.
After Joe left, Hitch stood around a few minutes trying to reason out what steps he should take. They couldn't do this to him, yet he knew Joe was right. Legal or not, they would do it. It was a hard week's horseback ride from here to the state capital. The law here was whatever the big outfits chose to say it was. Hitch rode north first, making a circle over that side of his claim and over open range well beyond, picking up what two diamond cows he found and pushing them southward. Giving them a long start, he rode off in another circle and made a second drag, picking up more cattle. They moved sluggishly, for the grass here was good, and they had no inclination to leave it. Whenever he let up pushing them, they slowed and began grazing again. When he finally had them strung out on a southerly course, he left them and went back to the first gathering. He found these no longer moving, but spread and grazing. He bunched them. After a long time, he managed to join them with the other cattle. A quick count showed he had perhaps two-thirds of his herd. The rest were scattered to kingdom come. By late afternoon, he had left 10 or 12 pairs strung across the prairie as he bullied the rest of the herd along. The county line was imaginary, not based on any geographical features such as a creek or a river. It was a straight line arbitrarily drawn on some map years and years ago. Hitch thought he knew about where it was, and he felt some relief when he pushed the cattle over and beyond it. He let them slow a little, but he wasn't confident enough to allow them to stop. Safety lay in distance. The more he could get of it, the better. There was always a chance some of the cattle might try to return to accustomed ground, though as a general rule in this part of the country, cattle drifted south, following the prevailing winds. Dusk was upon him when he began to think of stopping and fixing some supper. This was open range, just as in his own county, only a minor part of it yet deeded to individual owners. This county also knew cattle of the W and the Figure 4 and the Snake Track brands, as well as those of other ranches, big and small, which headquartered south of here. Hitch's cattle had as much right to graze this grass as anyone's did, wherever he chose to turn them loose. This, he decided, was as good a place as any. He stepped down from Walking Jack at a tiny creek where he found dead mesquite that would make firewood for his supper. He watered the horse, built a small fire in a sheltered spot where it could not spread out into the grass, and put a small can of coffee on to boil. Standing up from these exertions, he saw half a dozen riders bearing down upon him from the north. Hitch was unarmed, except for the saddle gun in its scabbard on his saddle. Not once did he even think of going for it. He stood uneasily and watched the riders approach. The one in front made a circular motion with his arm. Four men spurred out around Hitch's cattle. The remaining two rode up to Hitch. One was the sheriff he knew from town.
Howdy, Hitchcock. Hope you're fixing enough coffee to go around. I sure do need some.
You're welcome to coffee, Sheriff. But if you've come for my cattle, you can forget about it. I'm well over the county line.
The sheriff looked at his companion, the Torrington cowboy, Slant Unger.
Slant, did you see anything back yonder marking a county line?
Unger gravely shook his head. The sheriff turned again to Hitch.
Afraid you're mistaken, Hitchcock. Far as I know, I'm still in my county. I got an order here from the commissioner's court. Says I'm supposed to take custody of all cattle in the Two Diamonds herd and brand, among others. Them cattle you got yonder is all wearing the Two Diamonds, ain't they?
You're over the county line and you know it. You can't do this.
I suppose you just watch me.
Anger drove Hitch into landing a blow that sent the sheriff staggering back. He sensed a quick movement behind him and tried to turn. Slant Unger had pistol-whipped him. He tried to push to his feet, but instead he went down on his stomach.
You oughtn't to have hit him so hard, Slant. You might have busted his head.
Oh, he had his hat on.
Lots of people look up to Hitchcock. They won't like us hurting him.
A man that betrays the outfit he works for ain't much to worry about, to my notion. Anyway, this'll help teach them that nobody messes around with the likes of John Torrington.
I got a bottle in my saddlebag, Slant. Go bring it here. Didn't go to do it like this, but orders is orders, and I got mine. Here, have a drink of this.
He held the bottle to Hitch's lips and tilted it.
It ain't exactly like we was taking cattle away from you. What we're doing is sort of holding them in escrow till the court has made a final determination. You know what escrow means.
You take them cattle back over that line and I'll lose them forever.
The sheriff didn't argue with him. He corked the bottle and started to place it back in his saddlebag. Then he changed his mind and put it into Hitch's hand.
Hell, you'll need this worse than I do. Keep it. I always kind of respected you, Hitchcock. Sorry things turned out this way. Seems to me like you'd be better off if you went someplace else and started fresh. Be better for all concerned if we was to ride by your place sometime and find you pulled out.
You'll find me there.
Hitch was vaguely aware that he had lain there a long time. It took him some time to get to his knees, for every move brought blinding pain anew. He looked at the horse and tried to think ahead. He didn't know if or how he'd be able to get in that saddle, but he knew that first he had to catch the horse. He began crawling on hands and knees. Walking Jack lifted his head, ears pointed forward in doubt. He was not used to seeing a man move toward him on all fours. Hitch stopped. If Walking Jack ran away, Hitch could lie here and die.
Whoa, son. Be gentle now, son.
Jack held his ground and Hitch's fingers closed on the leather reins. Hitch rubbed the horse's foreleg until Jack seemed ready to accept him. He reached up and caught hold of the stirrup. Holding it, he slowly pulled himself to his feet and leaned heavily against the horse. He lifted his left foot and somehow fumbled it into the stirrup. He tried then to pull up and got about halfway before he slid down again. The left foot stayed in the stirrup, though, giving him that much of a start for the next try.
Oh, boy. Don't you let me fall off.
Hitch sagged over the saddle horn, but turned Jack in the direction he knew led to the dugout. Every step brought pain, but gradually it became blunted to the extent that he was able to endure it. He clamped his teeth and made up his mind he was not yet ready to die. Much of the night was gone when he reached his dugout. He knew he couldn't climb down. When he tried to leave the saddle, he was likely to fall. The more he considered it, the more convinced he became that it was foolish to stop here. Farther on was help. Farther on was the McGinty place, if he could stay in the saddle that long. He turned Jack away from the dugout door. The horse seemed reluctant to leave, for horses have the same resistance to physical effort that humans do. He had expected to be turned loose here. But directly, Jack became resigned to the notion that he was not through working. Hitch had the horse moving in the right direction when he sensed consciousness trying to leave him and the pain coming harder again. He took a tight grip on the horn and hoped that if he did lapse, he wouldn't fall. He had slept in the saddle many times, some subconscious instinct keeping him astride. Hitch sensed when the horse stopped in front of the McGinty dugout. It was still dark, but the east showed some promise of morning light.
Rascal. Rascal McGinty.
He slid down the horse's shoulders and leg and piled limply on the ground. Jack stood a moment, as if afraid he might step on Hitch, then pulled away a few feet, looking confused. Hitch tried to crawl, but couldn't. He lay there and lapsed into either sleep or unconsciousness.